Hello, good afternoon.
Hi.
And welcome to Meet at the Hotel Bar. We are Freddie,
JC,
and Huss
from the band Floors, a three-piece indie pop band from London via Huddersfield.
So since we started touring with Floors, travelling the world, and during our previous lives as session musicians, we realised there are so many funny things that happen on and off stage, and so many stories that never get shared with the rest of the world. They just stay in the dressing rooms and the tour buses of the bands and artists you love.
Until now. In this podcast, we're lifting the lid on life on the road. And where better to meet up and tell those touring tales than a place every touring musician knows well, the trusty hotel bar.
In today's episode, we met up with the incredibly interesting and fantastically spoken Hugh from The Kooks. Having begun his touring life at the tender age of 15, Hugh continues to tour the world with one of the biggest bands of the last 20 years. They've scored number one albums, headlined festivals across Europe, and toured the world over.
Today, however, was a first for me at the hotel bar. I sadly tested positive for COVID, so it was up to Freddie and Huss to hold the fort whilst I called in from my quarantine bedroom.
So stay tuned to hear stories of beef with pretty much every UK band from the mid-noughties, how to successfully ask for Kylie Minogue's phone number, actual band fistfights whilst drunk on crack and rum, and Hugh's favourite fan fantasy, erotic fiction. Yes, we went there.
This is Hugh from The Kooks, coming up on Meet at the Hotel Bar. Now, we are recording, so no swear words, please.
No swearing?
I'm only joking.
No profanity. Do you mean that?
No.
Fuck no. Okay, cool.
I think microphone level's here, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Such pros.
Yeah. Can you tell we've done this before?
Let's welcome Hugh.
Yes, hello.
Thank you very much for being with us today in this wonderful location.
It's a massive pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's extremely busy where we are in the heart of London.
Set the scene.
Well, we're in a bar with textured wallpaper and taxidermy.
Yeah, there's a cat wearing a dress staring right at us, and I don't know how comfortable I feel about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the cat is sitting above I think it's a gull. Huss is the bird man of the group.
Mm.
But oh, yeah, it looks pretty lifelike. It looks like taxidermy to me.
Yeah, that's a gull, all right.
There are two ceramic Japanese foo dogs as well.
Ooh,
good knowledge. I just tried to avert my eyes and located a clown in a glass jar.
Yes.
On the other side.
It's funky, isn't it, to say the least?
It's very quirky. So, the first question, as always, is what would you like to drink?
Well, I've had quite a mad week, so I've been out quite a bit this week. And so I probably would have ordered some water, but that wouldn't have been very impressive or rock and roll.
That is not rock and roll.
So I went quite gentle, and I would like to go for a pina colada.
A pina colada?
Is that acceptable?
I'll take a pina colada.
It's okay. 2022.
Yes.
We will take three of those.
Yes.
As we are a man down today, ladies and gentlemen. JC has just got back from Vegas.
Yeah, for a bit of backstory, he was celebrating multiple weddings, multiple stags, and as you can imagine, multiple hangovers. So he's feeling the effects as we speak. And actually, we're going to try and call him now, and we've got a smart bit of tech that should allow us to get him on right now. So here we go. Let's give it a try.
Let's give it a try.
He's not going to answer, man. He's going to be in bed in his pajamas, watching Big.
Hello.
Hello.
JC.
Can you hear us?
How are we doing?
Hey, dude. So tell everyone on the podcast how you are feeling and where you've been.
Yeah, so I just got back from Vegas and survived Vegas, but I've got the Rona.
He's got the Rona.
I've managed to avoid it for 2 years, which is actually quite an achievement.
That is an achievement.
So I'm currently quarantined in my bedroom at home. So you guys are going to have to take the lead on this one.
Well, get yourself tucked up in the duvet. Get yourself a Lemsip.
What drink have you got, dude?
What drink have I got?
Yeah.
I've got a water and a ginger tea. What did you go for?
We've got pina coladas here, so you're missing out.
Yeah, good luck, mate. Lots of love to you, and we hope you get well soon with your macarona.
Cool. All right, well, let's get started with the questions anyway, Hugh. So once again, thank you for being here.
Pleasure, yes.
We'd like to start off by asking what your favorite city to tour in is, and wow, if there's any reason connected to that.
That's a really good question. I think I have a huge soft spot for Tokyo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just because it has such a diversity to anything that I've ever seen in London, New York, or elsewhere. But also for the same reason, it's my most terrifying place to tour. So if you're feeling slightly under the weather, I actually once had a massive panic attack in Tokyo. I was 19. I was exhausted. I was confused. I was probably what you would call suffering from nervous exhaustion. Mm-hmm. Whereas these days you would probably cancel a tour because of mental health issues. But 15 years ago, you just get taken around the corner for a beer, slapped on the back and told to get back on for the encore.
Yeah.
So, wow. Tokyo, yeah, is the most exotic but also the most challenging place, and I think that's why I like it so much.
Yeah, I'd love to go there. I think it's definitely on the bucket list for us. How did you find that you were received? How were the crowds out there?
To start off with, they're very quite polite and standoffish. It feels sort of, I don't want to say rude, but it comes across to our society as sort of a little bit quiet. But really what they're doing is they're being very respectful of the music. Mm-hmm. So you'll finish a song and then they'll sort of clap for about 5 seconds and then just stop and silently wait for the next song.
Yeah.
And you could hear a pin drop, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, that's a bit unnerving.
But it's respectful. Their culture is so respectful. They really... Etiquette is embedded in their sort of their zen-like way of life, and if you don't fit into that, they themselves can get quite offended too. So you have to know the protocol whilst you're there, and we've walked that line more than a few times. Late lobby calls and whatnot, they don't take well to tardiness.
Oh really?
Yeah. You've
got to be very punctual.
Dude, it's like, it's almost like you've offended someone's family if you are 3 minutes late to a promo meeting.
I think I'd be all right though. My nickname is Roy Keane because I'm always early for everything.
Really?
Yeah, Hus was here about 2 hours prior to seven.
I think if your friends give you nicknames based on your strengths, then that's a good friendship group.
Well, that's just one of like nine, which eight of them are based on weaknesses.
Okay. That's inevitable, I guess.
Oh, our drinks have arrived.
Oh, hey, yeah. Hey. Hey.
So, cheers. Let's do a collective cheers.
Cheers.
Hey.
Oh, yes. Cheers.
And we should probably be pouring some to the ground too.
Yes.
For the death of our monarch.
Yes, we've just found out that the Queen has sadly passed away. So here is us raising a glass to Queen Elizabeth.
Absolutely. Cheers,
guys. I was saying to Hus, I feel like today will be one of those days where people ask you where you were when you heard the news.
Yes.
So,
and you'll
some
have
momentous
to say
occasion.
You're with that guy from the Kooks.
Yeah.
Looking at a cat in a dress.
Looking at a dead cat in a dress. No, but really, it is a very sad day. It actually hit me quite hard before I left to come here. I'm not in any way a sort of monarchist. I love history. I'm obsessed with history. But my goodness, what a life she had, and what an enigma she was.
Fred, you were saying about your grandma's had numerous letters.
My gran is now 103. And so after you turn 100, you get a letter each year. Which
That's
is pretty incredible.
Totally.
So, being that you've done a hell of a lot of touring, as I'm sure we'll hear all about soon.
Yes.
You must have had a lot of travel days, a lot of days off.
I mean, my life is a travel day.
So, what is your favourite or best travel day to date that you can remember?
Oh my God. Okay, so one pops up. We had to travel from San Diego to Auburn in New York, upstate New York, in 24 hours.
Wow.
And the bus driver flatly refused. He was like, you've got to be kidding me. we did manage to persuade him with a bit of extra money. And so we did this journey, and we just 24 hours on a bus. You either deal with that amount of time sober or not, and there's two ways. So the quick way is to drink, and so Luke and I bought a bottle of Kraken, and ended up, he was learning how to box at the time, and so we were sort of three quarters of the way through this bottle of Kraken on a tour bus on a really bumpy highway. He decides to start teaching me how to spar. And when you have two sort of best friends who have known each other their whole lives and been in a band forever, there's going to be some things that you cathartically need to get off your chest. And when there's a physical violent activity at hand, things can get messy. So we were just kicking the shit out of each other on this bus with a bottle of Kraken. I think I cracked his rib. He like bled my nose.
Really?
I mean, it was proper sort of Fight Club esque, and we are not violent men at all. We are pacifists, but there was obviously some kind of deep rooted need to.
I guess you've been given a free pass to actually do that to each other as well.
Yes.
One of the few occasions that's the case.
Yes, and it kind of felt good in a really strange way. I would never ever condone or promote violence. But there was something very cathartic about it. We should have used boxing gloves, probably.
Ah, well, I was going to ask, were the gloves involved, or was it just literally bare-knuckle boxing in the back of the bus?
Bare-knuckle boxing with a bottle of rum.
And what were your engagements on the other side? Because assumingly you turned up bloodied and very hungover, or still drunk.
We got through the show. I mean, we always do. For some reason, I think because we've been touring since, well, I was 15 when we signed the deal and started touring.
Wow.
We've sort of been institutionalized to life on the road, a nomadic life. So, I've only ever cancelled one show in 20 years.
Wow.
The show must go on.
Is it bad form to ask the reason why you did cancel the show? Is that personal?
That was in Yokohama in Japan, actually. When I go to Tokyo, I challenge myself to eat every corner of the menu. So the night before, it was puffer fish and it was cod semen.
Oh, wow.
And I think we had whales.
Sorry, just one more time.
Cod semen.
Cod semen.
It's a delicacy. And then there was whale's heart involved as well. And
oh, my goodness,
man. Of course, I have to try everything once. But the next day, I had stomach cramps, and I called an ambulance and I went to hospital. And I thought I had stomach cancer or something like that. So I cancelled the show, and what happened was Luke and the rest of the band went on because we weren't going to get paid unless we played, and they wanted live electric music. Mm-hmm. So they did the show without me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've never seen Luke so furious in his entire life.
Did he really want to punch you?
I mean, he was just, we'd already been there.
I bet it made him appreciate or value you that much more afterwards.
That cemented my place in the band.
Yeah.
Very, very much so, yeah.
Okay, so over to you, JC.
So we all remember the excitement to go on tour for the first time, stepping out into the unknown. Talk me through your memories of your very first tour. Where was it? Who were you with? Hit me.
Wow, yeah, good question. Our very first tour was with a man called Jeff Hall, and it was called Life North of Woking Tour. Because
okay.
We'd only ever played outside of Brighton in a place called Woking. And so we'd never been to Liverpool, we'd never been to Manchester, we'd never had like a Chinese takeaway or gotten in a fight at the Hull of Delphi or any of these sort of tour rituals that were so common in the mid-noughties. So that was our first tour. And I remember the final date we did a huge party on the beach in Brighton, and we got back to the flat that we were staying at. There was a note on the table, and Jeff Hall, the tour manager, had said, "I'm sick of this, I've given up." And there was a pile of clothes next to the note, and he said, "I'm going to the sea and I'm not coming back."
What?
he did a sort of, you know that bit in like Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
When Captain Dan just kind of swims away. It was a bit like that moment. We'd driven him up the wall. And obviously it was all a bit of a charade, but he was a funny, funny guy. And that was, yeah, really fond memory.
Did he actually go in the sea?
Yeah, he went in the sea, yeah.
Oh, did he actually?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did he come out again? This isn't a really sad story, is it?
He did come back.
Thank goodness for that.
Yes, he did.
Okay, so like you said, you are definitely a veteran of the touring game. And as such, do you have any advice or any hacks or top tips that you could impart to our listeners?
I would say, in regard to touring, it's not always cut out for everybody. And if you don't feel comfortable on tour, don't do it. Because I've seen people suffer from all types of mental illnesses and stresses. It's the strangest job in the world. You go through bereavement together. You go through the loss of loved ones, breakup of relationships. It's the most kind of, it's a vexed job in that sense, because it's got every aspect of life in it. And it's okay to not be good at touring. It doesn't mean you're not a good musician.
Yeah.
And we've seen lots of people come and go through our band because of those reasons. But those of you that do feel up to it and do want a life of touring, a nomadic life, just get some fresh socks on the rider. Get some socks. That's all you need to feel good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or find that one thing that makes you feel good and just make sure you have that. Nando's or whatever, other chicken shops are available. That's my advice.
I like that. I like the fact that it's, it is specific to each individual, finding something that matters to you.
And also prioritizing just knowing yourself as well. You have to sort of understand your own mentality in order to work in a group and to work away from home, because there's not much space to be introverted on tour. Yeah. You are just surrounded by everything all the time.
I think it's so important, isn't it, to get the balance right of who you are on the road with. You are such a miniature family. And like you said, we've gone through losses together all on tour, and that is just, those emotions are magnified when you're away from your family, your friends.
Yeah.
Certainly being in a different country, in a venue in the middle of nowhere, and going through those emotions away from loved ones.
Yes.
I mean, just speaking from personal experience, to have Freddie and JC, we've got each other's backs the whole way.
Nice. It's hard as well, isn't it? Because you're in the best job in the world, and you're
living your childhood dreams.
Absolutely. You're in a place where thousands of people would give their right toe to be in a band and tour in the world. So it's very difficult to then sort of find a space where you feel comfortable complaining about the best job in the world.
Yeah.
But I would advise that it is okay to complain, no matter where you are, who you are, because it's all relative.
That's that unspoken pressure, isn't it, of that so many people would love to do this, so I should be loving to do this.
Yes.
At times there'll be good times and there'll be bad times.
Big time.
And big times as well.
Exactly.
Many big times,
So you mentioned socks a second ago, and that brings us nicely to our next question, which... Obviously, the Kooks have done a lot of touring.
Yes.
Your rider must have experienced many different items on it. What is the most diva-ish item that you've ever had on your rider?
We quite often ask for a cardboard cutout of Kylie Minogue, which we've never, ever received. Or maybe we have, but it's just not been visible, because I don't know how visible it would be. She's quite a small lass. We ask for that, we never get it. Honestly, we make a point of having quite a stripped back rider.
Yeah.
We don't really like having... We used to have champagne and bottles of gin and vodka and a whole bar. And now we just sort of have half a bar. And a
bottle of Kraken and some boxing gloves.
Yeah. Kraken's banned. Kraken is off the menu forever. But we just like the simple things. I think you can get very carried away with riders. It can get... and at the end of the day, it just gets wasted.
Can I just ask about the Kylie cutout? What inspired that? Is there a crush or...?
I have no idea. I think it was Luke's contribution. I actually met her recently at Annabelle's. She's lovely. She's a really sweet woman. And I was so drunk. I actually asked for a phone number. I couldn't believe what I was doing. I was like, am I going to do this? Yeah, I'm going to do this. Can I have your phone number, please? And she was like, and her friend next to her was like, obviously, who the fuck does this guy think he is asking for Kylie's phone number? And do you know what she did? She turned around, she heard that, and she went, yeah, of course, here you go. And it was like this gorgeous moment.
That's cool.
I don't know if it's her real number or not, but I haven't tried. Yeah.
just stop, quit while you're ahead. And yeah. Go with, yeah. That is her number.
But it was great because the person behind her just shut the fuck up. And it was righteous.
I mean, we have the technology, as we've seen, that we can call her in.
Should we dial her in?
We can dial her in.
Let's do it. Let's see if it works right now.
Okay, so we're back to you, JC.
So what would you say is the most memorable thing a fan has given me?
Oh, we have this really sweet fan who is an incredible artist. I can't remember her name, but her Instagram name is Panda something. And she's this watercolor artist, and she does these kind of slightly... well, they're very accurate likenesses of the band, but it's sort of it's like fan fiction. So,
do you have a cape?
There's sort of us in sort of various sort of sexual positions with each other.
I went lighthearted with the cape.
Wow. Okay.
What with? Hold on. With other band members?
With each other.
Okay.
It's fan fantasy fiction. I think it's quite a common thing in all sorts of circles of fanaticism. I think there's a lot of Lord of the Rings fan fiction, the sort of the Frodo, the homoeroticism.
I mean, you would look great with a sword.
Thank you.
Just say that out loud. You know?
Well, I think there's a bit of a comparison to Frodo and Samwell with Luke and myself.
Okay.
Some people draw parallels there.
Now you said it.
Which stop. I'm okay with.
You're much taller than them.
You should see our feet.
Okay, so what is the worst thing to happen to you guys whilst being on stage?
Oh man. So we played in Ibiza for the first Ibiza Rocks.
The first ever Ibiza Rocks?
The first ever Ibiza Rocks. It used to be at a club called Manumission, where they had a swimming pool in the club next to a stage where they would do, well, the owners would do live sex shows, famously. You would not want to go swimming in that pool.
No.
But people do. And we were playing, it was Faithless in one room, Skunk and Ancy on just before them. And then we were on in the next room, and then it was the Future Heads. So we start playing, my amp blows up. Literally blows up like smoke, fire, bang. We get another amp on. That, I shit you not, the same thing happens. It blows up. The bass cab blows up. So we're just like, what the fuck do we do? So Paul, our drummer at the time, was just playing this beat.
Blows up. And
spontaneously. Yes.
Spontaneously combust.
Bizarre gardening accident. So he just started playing and we all just started dancing on the stage, which was encouraged by the fact that we had accompanying us strippers either side of the stage, which we were kind of enthused by, to say the least. So it was kind of the greatest and the worst show of all time.
So you had unexpected pyrotechnics numerous times. High budget show in Ibiza Rocks. It really went in.
Big time.
So were you still paid for the show? That's the question.
Of course.
Oh, we're now on to my... Oh, should we just take a moment?
Let it be, guys.
Let it be.
Love it.
Very nice.
There are fields of wisdom.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
So we're going to change the tone a bit now.
Yes, bring it.
So this is our... it's my personal favourite section of the podcast. This is the beef section.
Love it.
I'm speaking as a vegetarian. This is more meat substitute, but this is the section where you get to spill any beef that you may or may not have had with artists that you may or may not want to mention. Over the years, has there been any quarrels?
I think pretty much everyone we've had beef with.
Oh,
I
shit.
Mean, it's just strange. We seem to attract it.
So pick your favourite beef moment.
Oh, they're all brilliant. I mean, it's kind of... in the noughties, there was a competitive kind of edge to bands. For some reason, we hadn't worked out that we were all going through the same thing and shared the similar kind of experiences, yeah, and could have been supportive to each other, but chose to denigrate each other, yeah, instead. Obviously, Razor Light was the famous one. He was saying all sorts of nasty stuff about us. And we were saying all sorts of nasty stuff about him. But the thing is, he would be a bit of a dick to everyone around him on his way up, Razor Light. And that was well known by the industry. We were kind to people on our way up, and we have a career still. I think it really just goes to show, bands didn't like the fact that we were being hammered by Radio 1, that we were darlings of Radio 1. Whereas nowadays, like the 1975 Radio 1 darlings, people support and revere that.
Yeah.
And that's a positive thing. So it's a different climate now. Yeah, I guess there was an Arctic Monkeys kind of tiff, but that wasn't really authentic, because that was just sort of more of a funny thing, because that was taken out of context. Alex was at one of our shows. He started tying Luke's shoelaces together whilst he was singing. So Luke just sort of gently pushed him away with his boot. And then obviously that gets turned into, yeah, Luke kicks Alex in the face, which he definitely did not and never would.
No.
We're not violent people. But people love it, don't they? That, I mean, for some reason, that was all that... anyone wanted to sort of report a band for is the aggy side of it all.
And was that mostly like tabloid beef, or was that Twitter and...
Oh, enemy, it's just the enemy.
Enemy, yeah.
I mean, there's been some Twitter things as well, I suppose, with Liam Payne a while ago. I think Luke stayed up one night, had a few drinks, and took to Twitter.
Always a great idea. Yeah, was he drinking, by the way? Kraken?
It was probably half the Kraken.
The leftover Kraken joke from the boxing match.
He hadn't learned his lesson. But I mean, you know, you sort of have to take the rough with the smooth with people's opinions on music, because you're not going to be able to please everyone, and there's going to be some jealousy and nastiness, and I don't know, we don't ever really seem to seek to hurt people.
No.
But it's important to have your opinions on music, for sure.
Yeah, I think we're all quite gentle chaps ourselves, aren't we? We don't tend to have any beef.
Well, why don't we start some beef between our bands?
We can start some beef.
See how
I'm not sure we
can...
should after the boxing training we've been hearing about.
Yeah, I think Freddie is the tough guy of flaws, so we'll put him up.
The gentle giant.
So you released a solo album in 2020. I read the best bio online that described the album as psychedelic pop, Dr. Dre's syncopation, Paul Simon's exotic worldly tones, Debussy's arabesques, and Disney strings. It then went on to say that it includes songs about train crashes and alien love affairs. We can't finish this podcast without asking, are those based on real life experiences?
Of course. I mean, well, it's hard to know where to start with that. The train crash song is called Snake Hip Stoker, and that's based on a poem that my friend wrote about two people who fall in love on a train. And he had it only half finished, and I wanted to finish it, and I wanted to kill them with a train crash. And he wanted them to live and survive. And so I basically just ignored him, took the song, and put a tree on the train tracks, and it was meant to be a sort of allegory for a relationship ending, which is what we've all been through and something I was going through at the time. I wanted love to die, and the train was an allegory for relationships, and I needed something edgy on the record. It was too lovey-dovey. And then the alien love affair, that was just kind of personal experience. When I was very young and I used to get a fever, I would hear these kind of voices, and my limbs would feel bigger than they actually are, and I would feel like I was sinking or sort of flying through space when I closed my eyes. And at the time, to help me through, I kind of imagined that I was able to communicate with other dimensions and other aliens. And so I wrote a song about that and sort of invented a story about a human falling in love with an alien. but not wanting to settle on planet Earth because it's ethically not quite acceptable. Basically, it's a shit show. So you search up to other planets to settle down and fall in love there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I think it does. Tell us about the Dr. Dre. Was it Dr. Dre syncopation?
Yeah, I'm just a huge Dre fan. I just adore West Coast hip hop in general. So a lot of the drumming on my record has that kind of groove, that kind of it's a feel thing, yeah, more than a like when you syncopate a bass guitar and a kick drum in a certain way, you can get this gorgeous groove, which Dre does mainly on 2001, and that's basically to me the elixir of rhythm.
Yeah. I could not agree more. West Coast hip hop is one of my biggest influences.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it. Well, any hip hop really, but yeah, it's just stuff that is very hard to actually recreate on a drum kit. You really have to tune your arms into what
man,
is going
it's,
on.
Man, it's got this like snap and this kind of urgency to it.
What
like,
you just did with your neck is one of the hardest things to do to an audience member that is listening to live drums.
Right.
Like that. That is what it makes you do.
You know you're doing something right. Exactly. If the crowd are doing that, you're in the pocket. You're playing well.
Totally. It's really strange, like the art of drumming, because it's almost like it doesn't matter if you play in time, but if you've got feel, you're in time with something which is asymmetrical or ametronomic.
I think it's massively to do with the ability to listen to yourself while playing as well.
Yeah,
if you're able to not get lost in what you're doing and actually listen to what you're producing, you're able to shift and move. And I think if that becomes then subconscious, then you are a good drummer, and you sort of, the rhythm is in the way that your body's moving. It's more like a dance
totally
than it is hitting the hi-hat with the kick drum and the matching the bass. It's more of like a routine that you're just in.
Absolutely. But it needs to be pushed and pulled as well. Like if you did a fill like, if you did that like on the metronome, it would sound shit.
Yeah, I mean, we've like as a band, we've all started to produce a lot more ourselves.
And
At the beginning of that process, we'd always be like, oh, quick, straight to quantize, make everything perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you progress, you realize that like the beauty of it is to allow it to be human and to be slightly late or slightly early.
There's a gray area because it can get shit really quickly as well. But one guy, Stevie Wonder's drumming, I always cite as being basically the invention of hip hop.
Yeah.
Because he would do this like one-handed drum fill, you know, on like, I believe when I fall in love with you, it'll be forever. It's got so much feel, but it's not dotted. And he used to do a load of one-handed fills. And that to me is, that's hip hop.
It's feel rather than technique with Stevie, and that's what he's got. And
totally.
It's insane as a drummer trying to learn Stevie Wonder drum parts.
Yeah.
Like Superstition, for example, probably the most famous.
Forget it.
It's so hard to
forget
play. Like I've been playing drums since I was 8, and I still can't get that groove right. And admittedly,
we used to play that in my first soul band. I was in a before the Kooks. I was in a band called Soul Solid Crew.
Nice.
That is amazing.
And we used to try and play Superstition, and to this day I still can't do that. I think it's a horn line, but I used to play it on guitar. I still can't. I'm just not funky enough or groovy enough yet.
All hail Stevie.
Totally.
So that brings us nicely to the final part of the podcast, which is the quick fire round.
Bring it.
And just for a bit more context, it's the kind of thing like if we say dogs, you might say cats, but equally, if cats don't spring to mind, I think they will in this location.
There's one staring at you.
But yeah, all right, we're going to get JC in for the first question.
Earth to JC.
Okay, so when we say Brighton Free Book Festival, you say...
Fuck yeah.
So we did some research and we were told that that is the festival at which you got scouted for your record deal.
Brighton Free Book.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Free Butt. Well, so Free Butt was a pub in Brighton.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a festival.
But was it more than one band? That counts as a festival to us.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, so the Brighton Free Butts Festival. Yeah, that's where we got... So the question is, if you say Brighton Free Butt Festival, I say, fuck yeah!
Hell yeah, it's a great festival. Okay, when we say Brit School, you say?
Awkward.
Okay.
I found my time there awkward just because it was gorgeous. It was good, you know, it's like Fame Academy. There's like dancers in the aisles and everyone's wanting to be famous and you're 15 and you're pitched against each other and there's this huge competitiveness and not much nurturing of artistic talent, but more so get in a room and you're told that some of you will make it and some of you won't. And that's a really unhealthy thing to say to a teenager.
Yeah.
So then these teenagers become quite ruthless, cutthroat, and arrogant. And to survive it, you have to be sort of quite arrogant in a sense. And that's what that promotes. Well, at least that's the effect it had on me. So that turned me into quite an awkward teenager.
So they really actually say to you, we don't think you're going to make it. As brutal as that, I guess.
Well, no, that not in so many words, yeah. But that's the kind of implication. Because when you're being taught by people who were once in the music industry, but are now no longer in the music industry, but are teaching kids about their time in the music industry, which is a place that they wish they were still in, the music industry, there's going to be some chippy fuckers.
Yeah.
And it's nonsense.
And that fuels the attitude of, like, the competition that you mentioned before about bands in the noughties and whatever. There
exactly.
isn't. The most supportive music scene that I've experienced or did experience growing up was Liverpool. That, for me, was like... I was playing in a bunch of different bands at that point, but everyone helped each other out. Oh, we'll do this night together. Oh, could you support us here? And then... I was in a band in Manchester, which had a totally different scene, which was everyone hates each other. Yes. You're all shit. We're way better than you are.
It's so weird, isn't
so
it?
So bizarre.
It's so weird.
Counterproductive.
I wonder what the cocktail is that makes it one or the other. I think Liverpool in general, Liverpudlians are a bit cooler than the rest of the country.
You heard it here first. Okay, on to the next one. So, just a bit of a disclaimer here. I'm dyslexic, and this is going to be fun. When we say libeling adieu.
A libeling adieu.
Thank you. Can I do that one again? Say that to me.
Liebling, it's like darling. Liebling, meine Liebling, like my favorite.
Liebling.
Adieu is goodbye.
Adieu. So, a bit of a disclaimer here. I'm. when we say libeling adieu, you say?
Pain. Yeah. It's a song about saying goodbye to the first person I ever fell in love with. And I wasn't able to say it in my own language. So that's why I changed it to German.
Ah, hence why I can't read it.
Because it's too hard to say goodbye sometimes.
I see.
Yeah.
That's deep and that's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we say Virgin Records, you say...
Good times. Them were the days. Them were the days. There was money in the music business. We had budget for record, for videos, record support, like tour support. We would blow like £80,000 on a music video.
Wow.
And then scrap it because we thought we looked shit. I mean, that them were the days. When we were on Virgin, it was fucking so fun. Yeah. Philip Ascoli was the MD. He had like Daft Punk skateboards in his office.
That's cool.
It was the coolest record label in the world, in our opinion. And the people that worked there were just gorgeous. Susie Amber, our whole team there, Vicky Ellis, Nick Burgess, just this Harry Lloyd-Jones, all these incredible, incredible people that just supported us and would pay for our drinks and our nights out.
That's the best bit, isn't it?
Yeah, so my answer is in one word. You say Virgin Records, I say expenses account.
Okay, I think we're going to hit you with one more, and it's going to be slightly... You can take it in whichever way you'd like, but the final question. When we say Hugh Harris, you say?
The universe.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to expand like the universe is currently doing?
I mean, it's like it's like that old quandary. What when you look at your brain, when you look at your head, what do you see? And some people answer, "Well, I see my face or my hair or whatever." And some people say that they see everything. It's the universe, consciousness. So when I think of myself. I guess I have a higher regard of myself than I used to. Hopefully that doesn't sound egotistical, but hopefully it sounds confident.
No, I think there's a fine line between confidence, and I think it is a positive message to believe in yourself and to be confident in what you believe. And
approach confidence from insecurity rather than arrogance.
Absolutely. Finally, just to round us all up here, what's next for you, Hugh, or the Kooks, or what have you got coming up? Have you got anything that you're excited about? Or
yes, well, we're finishing the touring season. I'm going to Warsaw tomorrow to do a festival with Tame Impala.
Oh, wow.
And then we've got a tour in Australia, and then I'm going to finish work on this musical theatre piece I've written.
Oh, amazing.
Which is about the unconscious mind, particularly unconscious fantasy. It's about a girl who stumbles across... a disused tube station in London, and it's also magical because it's her unconscious mind.
Yep.
And the posters act like two-way doors into her unconscious fantasies.
Ooh.
And she has to confront them in order to escape and answer the ultimate quandary, which is what led her down there in the first place, which is whether what she does with the baby she has just conceived with her best friend, who is due to be married the following month. And breathe.
So thank you very much, Hugh. It's been wonderful to talk to you. You are
you
a fantastic
too.
Human.
Yeah, it's been a fun chat.
And we
thank
look forward to everything that's to come in the future.
Thank you so much. It's been a massive pleasure, and good luck to you guys too with the podcast, and anything you need from me, let me know.
Oh, thank you. Great to meet you.
Hell yeah. And get well soon, JC. Lots of love.
Nice one. Thanks again, Hugh. Thanks so much.
Yes, mate. Take it easy, man. See you soon.
Yeah, see you soon.
Thanks for tuning in.
You're welcome.
Big thanks to Hugh for being part of the podcast today, and to the Zeta Townhouse Hotel Bar for having us. Get well soon, JC.
Also, we couldn't do this podcast without you guys listening, so huge thanks to you for being part of the Floors family.
If you do like what you hear and you haven't already, please make sure you like, comment and subscribe. It really does make so much difference for us, especially now as we're just starting out.
Join us next time, where we'll be chatting to Tom from The Naked and Famous. You can expect stories of beef with Machine Gun Kelly, spoiler alert for Bake Off 2021, and my impression of the one and only Huss's mum. Only on...